from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2013 on farms across New York State. That year, Governor Andrew Cuomo signed the Food Metrics Law, which was meant to encourage state agencies and institutions like schools, colleges, hospitals, and food pantries to buy local produce. Good news for farmers, they said. But 4 years after that law was passed, a new report says only 10% of state spending is on local food. And the report's authors say the state should increase its local spending to 25% in this category. They say that would give a $200,000 boost to the state economy just for farms there off the bat and help improve the health and wellness of 6.6 million people, many of whom are food insecure. Now, is that a realistic goal? And why hasn't the state spent more on local food already? How would an increase in spending impact local farmers? Some say they face challenges trying to meet the state's requirements. And we're going to discuss all of that this hour with our guests who are with us, including Dennis Lapel, co-owner of Lakestone Family Farm. Dennis, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Chris Hartman is the founder of Headwater Food Hub. Chris, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
Mark Scott is the executive director for Campus Auxiliary at SUNY Geneseo. Mark, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
And David Haight is the New York State director and assistant vice president for regional programs at American Farmland Trust, which is what, David? Why don't you tell us more about what you do? Are you there, David?
American Farmland.
Oh, there you are. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, David.
Focused on protecting farmland from real estate development, helping farmers take good care of that land, and help farmers make a good living from their land.
So this, I think, and I'm going to start with a small farmer in studio with us, who is Dennis Lapel. And why don't you tell our listeners how big, how small, where you are, and what you guys do first?
We are 65 acres of a farm. We do 3 acres in intensive vegetable operation. We raise chickens for meat and for eggs.
Your chickens are awesome.
I just want to say that.
It's really great. It's beautiful stuff. And I want to start with you, Dennis, because when you go back to 2013, as we said in the introduction here, I think the initial headline, to the extent people were paying attention, people said, "Oh, this is great for local farmers. This is, you know, now the state's going to put more emphasis. Well, it'll be an economic benefit to them." Maybe in theory, what's the reality for you as a small farmer?
Well, I'm an extremely small farmer, so oftentimes I think farms like mine may not even be considered in the realm of programs like these. But I was participating in a similar program, the Finger Lakes Farm to Cafeteria program, for a couple of years, and it was challenging for a farm the size of mine to work with, just because it was a direct farm to institution, and it was really hard to procure any volume of product that would be useful in that sort of setting.
Okay, and so now here we are 4 years later. What could change that would sort of change that scenario for small farms, or at least kind of take down some of either the barriers or make it sort of more of an impact?
Well, I think one of it is the amount of dollars that are put into spending for something like this, because a farm the scale of mine would require a lot more capital for our goods than many other places. Our stuff just costs more because it costs us more to produce it due to economies of scale. And oftentimes when, you know, they're using the word local here. So I kind of looked into what this program sort of calls local, and they have everything ranging from a 10-mile radius to, say, a school to something that's produced or even processed anywhere in New York State. So it could be, you know, products that are, you know, prepared somewhere in New York City or the Hudson Valley and then shipped up or something along those lines.
How do you feel about that definition of local?
Well, I don't prescribe to that as my definition to local. I'm more into the idea of, you know, a comfortable driving distance to go to pick something up.
Okay. David, is that fair?
I think local means a lot of different things to different people. And I think one of the opportunities in New York is that we have farmers of a lot of different sizes. They produce a lot of different crops in a lot of different ways. And so there's a certain consumer that, you know, often buys at a farmer's market or a farm stand, you know, directly from people like Dennis. And I know that well. My wife and I sell at a farmer's market every weekend. But I also think there's a lot bigger mouths being fed in institutions. And a lot of those institutions can feed, you know, thousands of people a day. And so it's just not realistic that they're going to drive down the road necessarily, particularly if they're in a place like New York City. And so we have to be willing to look further afield to be able to help address some of those types of consumers. But there's also farms in New York that produce on a bigger scale and have the ability to connect with some of those bigger institutions. So I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all to the definition of the term local.
Okay. Dennis, fair or not?
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree with that more because, you know, local, you could have a 1,000-acre farm and someone lives next door to it. That's local, you know?
See, I think that was a dodge. I think David's comment is I understand it, but if the public, I'm thinking about when we actually communicate food and food values to the public. And if we're going to use the term local, I think Dennis's description of within sort of a comfortable driving distance is probably right. And but I also understand David's point that maybe people don't understand. I think people don't understand food systems. And in a second, we want to bring in Mark and Chris to kind of help explain their perspectives on this. But let me stay with Dennis on this for 1 second, because when we talk about eating local, it's a romantic idea. People, when they go out to eat at restaurants, they love saying, I'm eating local. When they go to the grocery store, they love saying, I'm purchasing local. That is a simple idea, I think easily misunderstood a little. Can you tell me a little bit more about your feelings on, have we gotten too generalized, or is it still an important value to keep kind of pushing?
I think it's important to keep pushing it. You know, local, you can get local almost really anywhere now, because it's revered so highly by the consumer that, you know, larger companies are now using local as a marketing tool, you know, to get the dollars into their coffers instead of, you know, people. You know, I don't want to say that they're duping people, but they're using it as a marketing ploy to get people to spend money in a way that they think that they might be spending it more locally than they really are.
Sure. And so ultimately, is a farm like yours too small to see any benefit from this kind of an effort on a state government or any institutions that want to purchase quote-unquote local food, or are there ways to kind of mobilize smaller farms more effectively?
So farms like mine could, maybe I can't, you know, I can't support an institution the size of SUNY Geneseo, but I could support, you know, the cafeteria in my local school. You know, something like that, where I could, you know, I could supply a product or two for their lunch line on a daily basis, you know, or on a weekly basis.
Is that happening?
No,
but it could.
Yeah, if the right steps were taken and the right, you know, work was put in place by obviously myself and the right people at the school program, yes. But I don't know that. Again, if we can work it out into a situation where financially it would be viable for a farm of my size.
Well, let me turn to Mark Scott, Executive Director for Campus Auxiliary at SUNY Geneseo, who I think you can tell us about really the past decade or so of trying to kind of crank up what it means to be looking at local food for an organization, an institution like Geneseo.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting topic, and specifically the question of what is local. Because I can tell you, when I first started at Geneseo, we started with, we wanted to plant some stakes in the ground with respect to supporting local businesses, with respect to supporting minority and women and veteran-owned businesses. And we established back in 2007 that we were going to spend 20% of our operating budget locally, right, and at least 5% with minority or women-owned business. Now, some of that had some crossover. But the question of what is local? For us, we define that as 30 miles, businesses located within 30-mile radius of the institution, right?
Because yeah, that's pretty local.
We think so.
Absolutely.
We think so.
I like it.
But over time, we find ourselves struggling with being able to find more partners, enough partners to help us keep up with growing demand, right? Enough partners to help us keep up with what was really important to us, right? We wanted to create a greater texture and new dimensions to our local buying practices. And so over time, we had to stretch that now to 100-mile radius. Right. And so that's what we've been working with. And, you know, to date, we use about 18 farms that are located within that radius. But most of them come in through American Fruit and Vegetable. And I think that's what my colleagues here are speaking to. Right. I mean, these are sometimes the tough business decisions that you have to kind of, you know, process through with respect to that farm to table. right? You may have to give away some margin. You have to think about fulfillment and logistics. But for us, we had to move from that 30-mile radius to 100-mile radius over the last 10 years.
All right, so a couple of things here I want to follow up. And I don't want to necessarily just get hung up on semantics, but here's why I think the terminology matters. I think it matters because if the public ultimately ends up thinking local really doesn't mean anything, then it hurts everybody. I think we can talk local, maybe 30 miles or closer, regional, like 100 or maybe 150, whatever, and then state. That kind of those kind of three definitions to me as a consumer or just somebody who cares, because we're not even necessarily talking restaurants today. We're talking about institutions and whatnot. But all of those things factor in. And if we lose the meaning, it's trouble. So, but I like what you're doing. I understand the point that you're making. You had to go to 100 miles to kind of fit that some of that need. And then you can increase to what? How much are we doing that is local or regional at Geneseo now? What's the percentage?
Well, today it's about 10%, specifically with respect to food. And so that's fairly significant for us on a budget of about $16 million. So we're quite proud of that number. And I can tell you, from what we can see, based on the increased demand for plant-based diets, we think that number is going to grow quite significantly over the next few years.
What would it take to get to 25 or 50%? I mean, is that just impossible? Is that just a question from somebody who does not understand the food system at all?
No, I don't think it's impossible, but specifically as it relates to colleges and universities, you know, the truth of it is that we're in a demand business. And so as the dining habits, right, the consumption patterns change in a particular way, and specifically with respect to more plant-based and more agriculturally oriented, you're going to see us quite naturally, you know, have to find more and more partners to help us fulfill the needs of the campuses. So I think it's just going to grow by itself. I don't think 20% is unrealistic, but you're going to see certain things change in the marketplace that are going to push up some natural demand on what we need to do.
David Haidt, is that a dumb question? What it would take to get to 25 or 50%? Is that ignorant, or is there a future there eventually when we see those numbers in terms of local or regional food?
Well, Evan, a couple of things. One, I think your point is really well taken, that the language we use matters. And terms like local food are significant. I would actually highlight that I think the more important word that we haven't discussed yet is what we mean by food. And that could include fresh food, you know, fruits, vegetables. It could include minimally processed foods, like, you know, frozen fruits or vegetables. It could include milk, yogurt. But, you know, it could also include highly processed foods that are manufactured in New York State. And one of the things that we feel really strongly about is that as we're talking about local food, we should really be differentiating between the fresh and minimally processed foods that are healthier for you and the highly processed foods or beverages that are manufactured in the state. So that's number one. I guess number two, the 25% goal that we've been advocating for, we think is feasible in the next 5 years for a significant number of institutions. And there's a growing number of institutions that are making progress or hitting that type of number. So we think it's real. We think it's achievable.
Okay, before I turn to Chris Hartman from Headwater Food Hub, who I think plays an important role here, especially in relation to small farms and just how they face barriers to entry, I kind of want to follow up David's comment by turning back to Mark Scott from SUNY Geneseo and ask, what are students eating? I mean, you talk about a lot of this is demand-based,
yeah.
I think David is raising a really good point about definitions in terms of, well, yes, it's local, but it might be highly processed versus something that is not. Mm-hmm. And usually I think of highly processed as a pejorative these days. Mm-hmm. What are students eating and how do we change that?
You know, I will tell you that students are eating in a way that we're seeing more balance between fresh and healthy and process and typically not good for you, French fries, chicken strips kind of deal. And so they are looking for highly customized dishes that have an international flavor to them, smaller bites, bigger flavors. But customization is extremely important. They want to see their food being prepared, right? That's why you see when you come to Geneseo, all of our kitchens are open. We slice, dice, and chop fresh. That may take a bit more time, right, to get the student customer their meal, but they want much more fresh, healthy. They want to see it prepared. So they're going to eat more salads. They're going to eat more protein bowls. They're going to eat, you know, more stir fries and you know, they want us to use vegetable oil and just different kinds of ingredients that all come together to create a much more healthful experience.
And is that relatively modern? I only ask because I went to Ohio University.
Mm-hmm.
It was nothing fresh. I mean, like the dining halls, it looked like a crime scene.
Sure.
It was a horrible, horrible scene.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's changed, so OU, don't call me and give me, because I'm sure things have changed. How much has changed in recent years?
Yeah, dining has changed. At Geneseo, we call our eating establishments restaurants and cafes. And so we've been evolving that eating experience on the campus. So we've moved from away from cafeterias to dining halls and now restaurants and cafes. These are differentiating factors for students and their families when they're thinking about where to go to school. It's not the most important, but it is important. I talk to students and their families all the time, not just in terms of what are you offering in terms of your base, right, a dining solution, but do you have kosher solutions? Do you have gluten-free solutions, other food allergens? So there's a myriad of concerns or new consumer demands that we're having to come up with solutions for.
Let me turn to Chris Hartman, who's the founder of Headwater Food Hub, because I think sometimes when we have these food system conversations, it can feel all a little sort of like a mountain too big to climb here, that small farms that we appreciate are maybe too small to kind of break through, and that some of these, and as the last time you were on this program, we had conversations about the sort of power and just the mobility of these big companies, and getting past that is very, very difficult. So why don't you remind our listeners what Headwater is and how you see its role in this conversation about New York State wanting institutions like the SUNYs and others to put more emphasis on local food.
Yeah, well, it's a very relevant topic for us because it is very much the case that one of the fundamental value propositions of food hubs that are emerging around the country are really trying to figure out how to work collaboratively in partnership with a network of small to mid-sized farms and create a way in which that product can be aggregated and potentially even minimally processed so that you can really create the volume, the consistency, the continuity, the food safety compliance, all of the different pieces that go into really meeting an institutional set of requirements to deliver and supply food. So again, that's really a lot of the motivation around food hubs developing and innovating ways in which to really, again, continue to prioritize farmers and fair prices and sustainable food systems forward, but do that in a way that really builds scale appropriately, really builds capacity, and allows farmers to participate in this big marketplace of food.
And can Headwater and can local farms compete? So if I'm SUNY Rochester, which is not a thing, but if I'm SUNY Rochester and I say, okay, I want to do a quarter of my food buying locally or regionally, I want to do that. But Dennis LaPelle's chickens, which are the best in the area, mm-hmm. are also sometimes two or three times the price that I can get when I buy them in bulk, and I have no idea how the chickens have been treated, and they were probably chickens that fell over because they were so pumped up with antibiotics, but damn, they're cheap. Mm-hmm. And can we compete? How do we start how do you view Headwater's place there? I'll ask Dennis the same question in a minute, but how do you view Headwater's role there?
Well, I certainly think the answer is yes, we can compete. I definitely think on some pieces of this, it's a bit of a long game strategy, and it's going to be a team, collective, community effort to prioritize these things and move together in a positive way. But I think there's also some immediate opportunities of real wins. One of our core projects over the last couple of years, really very much with this farm to institution focus, has been working in partnership with a variety of processing groups or organizations interested in processing food, Link locally being a great example. We've been really focused on developing the minimal processing capacity needed to get farm-based product here from local farms into institutional kitchens. So specifically for us, that's been around chopping and washing salad greens, but we've worked with processors to be dicing potatoes, to be noodling butternut squash, to be slicing apples, all sorts of the different sort of, again, necessary pre-requirements towards making that food available to large institutional buyers. The the ability for or the desire or values-oriented decision for institutions to set specific goals and to prioritize finding and sourcing local ingredients is the other side of the formula. But with that in place, we believe absolutely we can, in partnership with farmers, develop the capacity and the ability to deliver on those demands. And we believe that it can be competitively priced. We believe it can be far higher in quality and freshness. And we believe it can tell the story that we all want to tell about supporting local and regional farmers, supporting sustainable agriculture, and moving forward.
I want all of our guests to jump in on this. So I'm going to hit it one by one, but let me follow up with Chris on one point here. You believe it can be competitively priced, but I still want to go back to an earlier comment you made, which is maybe we should still be thinking about the values that we set with food.
Yeah.
And just getting cheap isn't always a great food value. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'd love to talk more in depth, as far as the real costs of food and the hidden costs of cheap food. There is no doubt the very inexpensive chicken you mentioned has very real costs that we're all paying in some form, fashion, or another. So I think that's a really important part of the conversation. But I'm willing to, and I know, Dennis and I have talked a little bit about this too, I'm also willing to talk about economies of scale and appropriate scale and some of the really important innovation that can and should be going on within sustainable and organic farming to really work on an affordable product for a broader range of people. But I absolutely believe we should be spending more on food.
I'm with you. So let's get all of our guests. And Dennis, I hope I wasn't speaking out of school when I mentioned the fact that your chickens, which are the best, I'm going to keep saying that because they really are.
Thank you.
And I have no stock, by the way, in Lakestone Family Farm. But they are more expensive than what you get at, mass-produced chickens at grocery stores, right?
Yeah, pretty
That's
much.
That's okay to
there,
say.
Yeah, there's no...
And they should be.
Yeah, there's no two ways about it. I mean, the process by which we go through to raise our animals is, polar opposite to conventionally farmed poultry.
Dennis was on this program, I want to guess it was either late 2014 or 2015, and we had two separate shows in which we talked. One, we talked about the way pigs are treated, and then there was another in which we talked about how chickens are essentially raised. I think Nick Kristoff in the New York Times had written a piece called Torturing the Chickens We Eat, and I got on the phone with Dennis and Trish LaPelle, and I said, we need to talk about this. That was one of the biggest feedback shows we've ever done, because people care about this stuff. So number one, it's probably worth reminding people that some small local and regional farms really are embodying the values that we hope, and Lakestone is an example of that, but that tends to be occasionally a little bit more expensive. So let's talk a little bit about what Chris is discussing, which is two things. Maybe raising the public's expectation for those who can afford to up front what we're spending on food, but also making sure that you're competitive if you're going to be trying to get into certain institutions and have schools and SUNYs coming to you saying, yeah, let's do this, or coming to Headwater and saying, let's go local.
Yeah. So for my perspective, in addition to the fact that we raise our own chickens, we do all of our own slaughtering and processing. So with that brings an additional sort of, whole host of expenses. And then also some limitations from other departments of the state government, namely ag and markets and limitations to the number of birds that we're allowed to process at the scale that we are at. So for us right now, we're actually expanding and building a New York State licensed processing facility, which will give us the ability to expand by 20-fold. So it's
20-fold.
Yeah. So it is really real opportunity for us. It's costing us money to get there. But as far as our poultry operation goes, that's giving us the ability to expand, which then will, it all comes down to economy of scale. We'll now be producing more. We'll be purchasing larger quantities of feed, which will help bring those costs down. We'll be slaughtering more birds at one time, which means we'll have faster equipment, so it'll take less time to do each one. Those sorts of things are all what, foster the pricing structure that we go under. And then we have, just like any other business, we have all the associated costs with personnel, workers' compensation insurance, for example. I pay a ridiculous amount. It's 17%. So all of my labor is, an additional 17% on top of what I'm paying. I still have to come up with that money. No matter what I charge for my chicken, I still need to come up with that money. So in my vegetables, it's all the same situation. So we look for ways that we can try to cut our corners to get our costs down, because like any other business, you want to produce your best quality, or the quality that you're trying to produce, and do it for as little money as possible.
All right, one more question for Dennis, and then we'll have Mark and David weigh in on this too. I have it on good authority that you are a dad as well as a farmer.
Yes.
And so when you look at local school systems and the food that is served, back to David's point about when we put local on, it doesn't always mean it's not super processed or those kinds of things. How do you feel about the quality of what you're seeing in, you know, K-12, that kind of thing?
I don't see a lot of it personally because I'm not there, but my kids usually bring lunch to school.
That's not necessarily an endorsement, Dennis.
Well, yeah, it's not. And it's not anything against the way that maybe it is against the way that the system works, or what they're able to afford. But there's you know, the budget is what the budget is, and the school needs to feed the number of kids that they have to feed. So, you know, there's lots of other, you know, lots of foods out there that are subsidized that make their way into the school. Milk, for example, is a great one. You know, there's heavy subsidies on milk. Milk is relatively inexpensive. And I actually wonder how much of the percentage of the New York State money that they're talking about is actually dairy, because, you know, milk and dairy comes from all over the state. So that could actually account for a lot of that 10% they were talking about in the study.
David, any insight there?
Definitely. We are very inclusive and talk about all types of food that could be served in institutions. So Dennis is absolutely right that it does include fluid milk, it includes yogurt and other types of dairy products, it includes meats, it includes vegetables, it includes fruits. So it does include all of that. And you know, New York is a big milk-producing state, and milk tends to be a common thing served in particularly K-12 schools, but other institutions. So I don't know if there's a general rule of thumb, but probably, you know, maybe around 8%, something like that, 10% in a K-12 school might be milk that's being purchased.
Okay. So let me then also ask Mark Scott is the executive director for Campus Auxiliary at SUNY Geneseo. Chris Hartman from Headwater talked about the effort to make sure that institutions like yours can view the products of local farms as competitive. Mm-hmm. And I want to know how you view it, how much maybe needs to change for you to bring those numbers up, or how you view how that price works and how much you can purchase.
Well, a couple of things. The first thing I'll say with respect to milk, at Geneseo, we are exclusive for our milk with Upstate Milk. So we spend almost $130,000 on nearly 27,000 gallons of milk exclusively with Upstate Milk. Now, you know, it's a little different when it comes to yogurt and such, because the demand is for the preferences are all over the place. But we use Chobani, Upstate, et cetera, et cetera. We're exclusive with Upstate Milk, and we're very, very proud of that relationship. But I think the one thing that's important here is to emphasize that institutions can't just put it all on the producers, right? So I think it's incumbent upon us to create a dialogue, a partnership that speaks to a stated commitment. Right. And so if we establish goals, which I think is extremely important, right, you got to put a line in the sand and say, that's the top of the mountain. This is where we're all going to. And we have to talk about how to do that together. And so what that might look like is that I may have to commit, right, at Geneseo to some volume, some poundage, right, some tonnage of products that I'm going to source from a particular location. All right, that in turn gives my colleagues an opportunity to go to banks and make investments, et cetera, and plan, you know, with the kind of forethought and certainty that says I want to be able to pay my bills. Right. But I think you got to do that collectively. Right. We have to invite Fredonia and Brockport and Geneseo and U of R and RIT together to these kinds of commitment conversations. So I think it's important for us to think about this from the perspective of community sustainability. Right. Right. Because when we talk about sustainability, it's about what do we do to improve the conditions of all of us that exist as part of the community. And we all have a role to play. So I don't think we can just put it on, you know, my colleagues here. I think we have a role to play. And that means we got to commit to volumes. right? We have to be actively involved in the solution building in terms of how do we get it from your farm to the plates of our students and our faculty members and our visitors. And
Well, we're going to continue the discussion after our only break of the hour. Our guests are talking to us about what it means to be local in New York State. New York State wanting to increase the percentage that institutions like SUNY Geneseo and others are spending on local food as a way not only to assist small local farms, but also to offer better products to students, to people who these institutions serve, and more. So the idea is it's better for everybody. The question is, how do you bring down those barriers to entry? How do you actually do it? Our guest this hour, you just heard Mark Scott, Executive Director for Campus Auxiliary at SUNY Geneseo. On the line with us is David Haight, New York State Director and Assistant Vice President for Regional Programs and American Farmland Trust. Chris Hartman's the founder of Headwater Food Hub, and Dennis LaPelle is co-owner of Lakestone Family Farm. After this short break, we'll come back, and if you want to join the program with comments or questions, you can call 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, we'll talk to Adam Serwer, the journalist for The Atlantic, whose recent piece is about the delusion of the alt-right. And he talks about America's history with white nationalism, some historical parallels and lessons from journalist Adam Serwer. Then in our second hour, grad students talk about the possible impact of the new congressional tax plan on them. Talk with you Thursday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our conversation was almost spilling onto the show because there's a lot to talk about as we talk about what local food means, especially in New York State's efforts to see its institutions putting more emphasis on local. So before I get to some of our feedback from listeners, I would like Chris Hartman, if you could, the founder of Headwater Food Hub. I know you want to weigh in a little bit more on what you heard from Mark Scott at SUNY Geneseo and others regarding institutional commitment, increasing the emphasis on local and more. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I just want to commend Mark and his team over there in the sense that I very much agree in this around the fact that institutional level commitments, setting specific goals and being transparent about that, that is a huge part of this all working out successfully. And just as you describe, it flows backwards in the sense that I look forward to working with SUNY Geneseo, by the way, and we'll be in touch soon. I can use the University of Rochester more as an example of a institution of a college university setting that we've worked very successfully with. And just like you described, they've set very specific, very high goals. And they are currently sourcing about 40%, a little bit more, within the local realm. And if you add this sort of processed in New York but not grown in New York, they're well into the 60s on some of that stuff. So very high goals. And it has been exactly that very specific setting of a goal and then the problem-solving, head-scratching work that goes into meeting that goal that's allowed us to work in the ways that we have and again, have that long-term strategic approach to developing capacity and making this happen. I mentioned the salad greens. We've had a similar project with ground beef patties, for, you know, New York ground beef burger, which we're now doing throughout U of R. Mm-hmm. That has been a two-year process to figure out and develop that, and that has only been a worthwhile investment of time, energy, and resources because of a specific goal and a shared understanding of our efforts to get there. And so I commend that effort. And, you know, the recommendations that the Farmland Trust is doing through their report here on getting institutions to set goals. In fact, I think it's one of their first recommendations. I really do see that as an important part of the success moving forward.
Yeah, David, you want to weigh in on that, that kind of a commitment that different institutions are making?
Yeah, I think, you know, traditionally a lot of our purchasing systems and institutions have prioritized cost and convenience, and particularly low cost and convenience. And I think as many of the others here on the show today have highlighted, that changing that is not going to happen by accident. It's going to happen by intention. And we need to be really clear about what our goals are and then have clear metrics for tracking progress. And that's really why we released the report we did with our partner, the New York Academy of Medicine, and our Public Plate and New York State report found that, you know, by our best estimates, the average state agencies were spending about 10% of their food dollars on food produced in New York. And that if we could even make that step going from 10% and to 25%, that would not only add $200 million to our state's economy, but I think it's really important to look at who's being fed most often in our institutions. We have nearly 2 million children that are in our K-12 schools, and you know, for a lot of those school children, the food that they get at breakfast or lunch and maybe an afternoon or after school snack can be some of the most regular and dependable meals that they get, and includes our seniors. So there's a real opportunity, particularly if we're emphasizing that fresh and minimally processed food category that we talked about earlier, that this is, you know, perhaps some of the most vulnerable citizens we have. And so really what we intended to do with the report we released was to try to put a benchmark, put a line in the sand of here's where we think we are today, and here's what it could look like in the future if we changed, if we took some action. And I think the good news is that there has been action happening. I think Governor Cuomo and our state legislators and our current Commissioner of Agriculture, who's a farmer who does a lot of sales to institutions, New York has started to make some real progress here. But these are redesigning and reinventing whole systems. And so that's not going to change overnight. But it starts with having a clear goal in mind of where you want to go.
We're talking, as you said, $200 million. The report says $239 million possible economic impact here if you go in this direction. All right, so let me get some feedback from listeners here. First of all, Joel writes to the program and says, what about if you want or prefer organic apples? Apples are generally sprayed two or three times. It's hard to find organic apples locally, along with other food items, too. So, David, you want to hit that one, organic versus non, and you know, maybe the interest some consumers have there?
Sure. I would say a couple of things. One, certainly apples are, you know, one of our most commonly produced fruits in New York. I think one of our great recent farm and institution success stories happened just to the east of where you all are is in Wayne County, where they used to get all their apples from the state of Washington. And they're one of the largest apple-producing counties in the country, but their K-12 schools were serving apples that were coming from another part of the country. And with the help of the Food Link, the food bank in Rochester, they were able to bring Wayne County apples to Food Link, slice them, wash them, bag them, and then send them back to K-12 schools there. And it's, I think, a good example of the current system had prioritized convenience and lower price, and with some intention and some investment in food processing infrastructure and some relationship building, that really changed. And now kind of local kids are eating local apples, and that's just a great success story. Those you know, aren't necessarily organic apples, and I know there are some consumers that really prioritize that. And so for some institutions that have that type of budget and prioritize that, there certainly are opportunities to buy those types of fruit here in New York as well.
And Dennis LaPelle, co-owner of Lakestone Family Farm, always good to hear from farmers on what the term organic means to you and what it really means, because, again, we've been talking about, you do chicken, among other things, but why don't you talk about what organic means here?
Well, it definitely doesn't mean, especially in regards to New York State apples, no spray. So apples in New York State pretty much are going to be sprayed regardless of whether they're organic or not, because it's the humidity and the climate here, it's a requirement if you're going to have a sellable crop. People are not going to eat apples that have wormholes in them, and they're just not going to do it. So, you know, even organic apple farms in New York State are all on a regimented spray program of approved materials. So anything, that there's an Organic Materials Research Institute that puts out the list of appropriate sprays, or really it's appropriate things to use in agriculture for anything, whether it's animal health and well-being, or sprays for insects, or for herbicide use, or anything like that. There's a list that we can go to. So then the USDA sets out this program, the National Organic Program, the NOP, and we as organic farmers are required to follow the guidelines set forth in the program, and then we receive an annual inspection to prove that we are actually following the methodology they put forth for us. It's a good place to start in the conversation with local food is, you know, whether or not you are organic, if it's something that the consumer is even interested in. A lot of people just don't care or don't know or it doesn't matter to them. There's, you know, a lot of room in there. But for us, it's a place to start. In addition to being certified organic, we are also no spray. So for people who are interested in that, who don't want any sort of chemical used on their product, then they can come and find us. But in, with regard to the apple, I mean, especially something that's going to be produced to be used in an institutional type setting, they're going to need the volume that's going to come out of a sprayed crop, sprayed managed crop.
Okay. Let's get an email on the question that Wayne sends to us, which is there an equivalent form of CSA on an industrial scale that could be implemented for regional, local regional farms and institutional users? Chris Hartman from Headwater, you want to take that one up?
Well, one thing I just want to say on the previous question,
yeah, sure.
And it, this relates back to what you were talking about earlier as far as local and all of this, because it is, I think there are multiple variables at play when we're really talking about a food system, a sustainable food system, food system of integrity. You know, we think a lot about this at Headwater, as in particular, we try and figure out how to service the institutional marketplace, as it were. Continuity of food, you know, ongoing supply of all of the different things those students are interested in eating. This is a really important part of the business that Mark's running over there, and figuring out how we can continue to prioritize sustainability and integrity and fair treatment of farmers, but not get hung up on local being a barrier to that, but a really important piece of a sustainable food system. That's something we're endlessly interested in discussing, talking about, and figuring out. I put organic sort of loosely as an important variable in there too. If all of the local food system efforts turn into double downing on conventional chemical-based agriculture, higher yields processes, we may or may not find ourselves in a better space as far as that type of investment in energy. So there's really a lot of important things to be considered here. And so we have a strong focus on organic and sustainable agriculture at Headwater. A lot of the chopped and washed romaine that we delivered to institution was a certified organic product. And we believe the sweet spot future place we're looking for really brings organic and sustainable agriculture right along with this interest in developing local food systems. But it is a tricky process, and it adds to some degree that much more challenge to the effort. But it really is an important piece of it. As far as the industrial CSA.
Yeah, and again, I'll read it again. Wayne says, is there an equivalent form of CSA on an industrial scale that could be implemented for local, regional farms and institutional users?
Yeah, I believe Mark was starting to spell mm-hmm. that concept out. Mm-hmm. If we could get institutions to get together as a networked buying club, that would be a similar model to a group of citizens networking together to support a specific farm. Loose interpretation, and I'm not trying to get into a CSA debate about whether or not that is a CSA, but the concept of shared understanding, active open communication, and getting eaters and producers onto the same side of the fence, I believe there's versions of that that would be, like Mark was stipulating, colleges and areas getting together and saying, hey, instead of in isolation, as a group, how can we really talk about supporting local farmers, supporting sustainable agriculture, mm-hmm. supporting the business economy locally that's really building around good food?
What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, you know, we it's interesting. We there's an initiative already underway that brings the area's colleges and universities together to talk about, you know, shared services opportunities. That's UNYCC, the Upstate New York College Collaboration, 20 or so area institutions. And, you know, we've mostly been talking about administrative type opportunities. But you know, at the end of the day, as different as we are, when you think about it, we're all doing the same kinds of work. Mm-hmm. You know, we're educating students, right? We're impacting our, you know, our communities. And it, you know, it stands to reason that this is just as good of, you know, of an area to be exploring, you know, as any other, right? But just like, you know, we tend to hold on to the ideal that our faculty members are better from one institution to, you know, from another, we like to believe that the tomatoes that we sell are different too. Yeah. Yeah. But I think the debate, the conversation could be healthy. And I think it's certainly one that's worth having.
Okay. Yeah. Dennis, as a farmer, are you optimistic on this idea of sort of group buying power from institutions?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a good direction to move in. And with organizations like Headwater Food, it makes it possible for farmers, you know, to sort of get into that space. Because obviously something I can't do on my own, if Chris is working with 7 other me's, you know, we could,
yeah,
in conjunction could, you know, get enough of something together to supply, mm-hmm, you know, the institutional clientele.
David, how much of a piece to this puzzle do you think that is?
I think it's a critical piece. I mean, I think one of the big challenges with farm to institution is getting alignment, an alignment of scales of production with scales of purchasing, of price, of interest in certain production methods. And I think particularly when we look, you know, broadly around New York State, there are, you know, again, institutions that serve, you know, hundreds of thousands of meals in a single day, or certainly over a period of a week. And so there are very few farms in New York that produce at that type of scale. And so the idea of pooling food from multiple farms, you know, through a place like Headwater or some other type of regional food hub is really the linchpin of helping to make this happen, so you can get the efficiency that's needed. And, you know, particularly if we're talking about K-12 schools who are, you know, working on margins of pennies per meal, that you really need to deal with that reality of the budget that they have. And so, you know, increasing efficiency to reduce price is a key piece to this puzzle.
I want to read the comment from another local farmer who sent us an extensive comment on how we view the food systems and the work that goes into it. So I will read her comment, and then we'll see what our guests think about this. She writes, "The struggle for us, and most farms like us, is the labor involved to farm vegetables and the cost of that labor. We believe in paying a fair wage to our employees. We don't get any crop insurance or subsidies for growing vegetables. Our insurance is significant. We hold all of the risk and very little of the reward, and we don't pay ourselves. It's unsustainable. I saw a statistic this past weekend," she writes, continuing, "that 85% of fruit and vegetables eaten in this country are hand-picked. That's labor no one even considers. It's physically hard. It's not necessarily mentally or emotionally rewarding. It can be hot and buggy or cold and rainy. And this type of labor is viewed as demeaning. We all view farms as farms, you know, with smiley faces, romantic. But actual farm work is so crappy and underpaid and unreliable. There's very little reward, let alone ability to sustain a business. We know so many farmers these past few years just stopped farming, found another job ag-related, but not having to sell their own homegrown stuff." So that comes from a local farmer. And I'm going to ask Dennis LaPelle first, because I know you've expressed some sentiments that kind of line up with that. But why don't you add to that if you want, or let our listeners know your thoughts as a small local farmer, what you want them to really understand about the work that you do and the reality of it.
Well, it's generally, even, you know, people often ask me what I do in the winter, and I still work. It's 14 hours a day. You know, I work 6 days a week. I do take a day off, but and it's nonstop. So it's challenged to find time with the family. And it's absolutely right. It's, you know, cold out. I still have stuff to do. If I'm not out there doing the things that need to get done, I can't make a product to sell. So regardless of what the weather is, if it's hot, if it's cold, when we get berated with rain like we did in this past spring, it gets to be very challenging for us to even supply what we need for our CSA, let alone our other markets into, you know, places like the Headwater Food Hub and so things along those lines.
Are there any systemic changes that could come your way that you think could be good for you as a business owner, but also just for your workers, you know, fair to everyone involved? Are there things that could happen? I don't know if it is the way the public perceives food, if there are governmental or regulation changes. How do you view that?
I think we already talked about sort of the consumer education piece.
Okay, so there's one.
I think that's really the lion's share of it for a farm of my size, because we really do rely on the individual to make those individual sales. That's where the money is the best for us, is when we're selling, you know, direct marketing.
All right, so some final thoughts as we get into our last 90 seconds. We'll go about 30 seconds apiece. Chris Hartman from Headwater, you want to leave the listeners with this as we think about spending more of our money and institutions on local produce, local food, local farms.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, the way you just said it is maybe some good closing remarks. This was a lot about institutional buying power or buying habits, and it really, there's a similar version for all of us in a similar way. It's about really thinking carefully, collectively about our priorities and where we're trying to head, setting some goals around that, and then marching forward together in that way. And so sustainable ag, food with integrity, local farms, these all have a wonderful future if that's what we choose to prioritize and march in that way.
Okay, David, some final thoughts. Got to keep it tight. Go ahead.
I think it's important for New Yorkers to recognize that there's something that everybody can do to affect the issues that we've discussed. We've launched this collaborative initiative, Farmed Institution New York State. So if people want to get involved, you can go to our website, finys.org. There's something that everybody can do to make a difference in the issues that we discussed.
finys.org.
That's correct.
Farmed Institution. Thank you very much for your time today, David. And Mark, some final thoughts from you. Got to keep it tight.
Good. Couple things. I think it's important for your listeners to know that institutions are already doing some good work in this area, right? The people at our institution, Chef Jonna Ann, Executive Chef Alana Stevenson, I mean, they do backflips to ensure that we continue to make inroads and raise the bar. But I think the other piece, I want to double down on this message of finding ways to bring our community together and starting to have thoughtful dialogue around this matter.
Thanks for taking the time to join us today, Mark, from SUNY Geneseo. Appreciate it. And Dennis LaPelle, where are we going to find those chickens I keep talking about?
You can find us at the Brighton Farmers Market on Sundays at the Idlewood Community Center in Brighton from 1 to 4 in the afternoon.
And online where?
Lakestone Family Farm, www.lakestonefamilyfarm.com.
Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate what you do.
Me.
And Chris Hartman from Headwater is all online. Where for Headwater, Chris?
Headwaterfoodhub.com.
Thank you very much for the time here. Great discussion with our guests here. Our thanks to John Andrus, the engineer, Audrey Sample, intern, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon, and we're back with you Thursday on Member Supported Public Radio.